And we really have to start thinking about this as a complete system. And so when we look forward, we're looking at it as one water. We're looking at it as what is the rainfall, what is coming into our conveyance and storage systems, but what's happening in our treatment works. And when we look at that, then we start to understand a complete water cycle. And that's really where we need to be as an industry. We really need to think of this complete water cycle.
Welcome to Inflection Points, a podcast series from Jacobs. I'm Stephen Ludwig, your host. That was Susan Moisio, Jacobs Global Solutions Director for Water Conveyance and Storage. She's been working in the area for 32 years and has been named as one of the top 40 influencers in the water industry. While many of us take sewers for granted, this podcast begins to pull the curtain back on the highly sophisticated approach communities are taking to plan, design, and construct effective sewer systems. Susan talks about new ways communities are dealing with stormwater and sewer systems, why working with combined sewer overflows are so important, the significance of wastewater tunnels, and how new digital tools are revolutionizing the industry. We also talk about one water, what that is, and why it's so important to the future. Inflection Points is where we meet the people of Jacobs that help create solutions that deliver a more connected, sustainable world. With that, it's on with the podcast. Now, Susan, you were recently named the Global Water Intelligence list of the top 40 influencers in the water industry. They called you the go-to person for conveyance systems, combined sewage overflows and storage. How did you get into this line of work? That's so interesting.
Well, thank you. I got into this line of work right out of college, right out of graduate school. I started with the Cincinnati Metropolitan Sewer District as an engineer in the wastewater collection division. And that's the division that is responsible for collecting all the wastewater for 3,000 miles of sewer in the Cincinnati metropolitan area.
That's a big job.
That was a big job, but a fun job. I really enjoyed it. A lot of field work, a lot of getting out in the system and understanding how the combined sewer system, how the sanitary sewer system worked. We were responsible for, I mentioned, 3,000 miles of sewer, but also for protecting the city when the Ohio River floods. So we have a flood control responsibility as well. So in that role, I learned how sewer systems worked and how they didn't work because we had over 240 combined sewer overflows, over 100 sanitary sewer overflows, and many times our system backed up into houses, and so we had basement backups that we had to work on. My team was responsible for trying to figure out how to fix those.
That would be an important thing to fix.
It wasn't an important thing to fix. It was also...
Was it a legacy system? It had to be. Cincinnati's not a new city, so I assume a lot of the stuff you're dealing with was old, and the engineering had advanced a great deal. And so
yes.
I'm sure you brought a lot of that to the table.
Well, it is an old system. Mm-hmm. It is the combined part was some of the first part that was developed. And sewers in the beginning weren't.
Before we go on, I'm sorry. Can you define for us what a combined sewer overflow is?
A combined sewer overflow is an overflow from a combined sewer. So a combined sewer is a sewer that conveys both sanitary and storm. So let me dig into that a little bit. All right. So a storm sewer is one that when it rains, water that runs off the road or off your roof goes into a catch basin and goes into a storm sewer and goes to the river. In the beginning, when cities were developed, they built those type of sewers. And then over time, they put the sanitary flow into those pipes, and they were combined. So it has stormwater and it has sanitary.
Okay. So the rain and whatever from the runoff from the streets would eventually hook up with what comes out of the house.
Yes.
Okay, great.
Yes. And so Think about this as those pipes are going to the nearest waterway, to the river. So that combined flow, sanitary and storm, when sewers were first developed, and I'm going to use Cincinnati as an example because I'm more familiar with that, that combined flow went to the river, untreated.
And that was common around the world.
That was common around
the
world.
That was the practice.
That was the practice. And then in the 1950s, we developed wastewater treatment plants. They were built in Cincinnati, and interceptor sewers were put in place that intercepted the combined flow. And they took about 6 times dry weather flow and took it to the treatment plant and treated it.
Okay, what's dry? 6 times dry weather flow?
Okay, dry weather flow would be when it's not raining. So average flow.
I guess I should have just figured that out. Okay, good. Yeah.
Okay. So we have dry weather and we have wet weather.
Sure.
All right. So 6 times dry weather flow would be what could be conveyed to the treatment plant. But then when it rains, anything greater than that would overflow into the river.
Okay.
And that's what a combined sewer overflow is.
Okay.
Is that overflow to the river. It's also a combined sewer overflow could be that location where it overflows.
Mm-hmm.
So when you get into a regulatory discussion, often there's a fine point about where it overflows and how much it overflows and whether it maybe intercepts 2 or 3 places. So they're very complex, especially urban environments that are cities that have been older. Some of our older combined sewers in cities like Cincinnati or New York or Chicago D.C., that type of thing.
Right. So from a layperson's perspective, mm-hmm. which would be me,
okay.
it sounds like if you're overflowing sewage into something, that sounds bad.
Well, I think it could be conceived as bad.
Okay.
But let's think about when it is overflowing. It's overflowing when it's raining. And so it's a dilute mix of sewage and stormwater. People are normally not using the rivers at that time. But it does impact the river. And so that's what we do.
So you plan for that and make sure it's working the way it's supposed to work.
Well, that's what we are working on. That's the work that we do, is to look at these systems and understand how they're working today. How can we reduce the overflow to the river and the receiving stream? But there's another piece of this, and that's climate change impacts. So as we look at these systems, we understand what's happening today. We're looking 20 years into the future so that we make sure we have a system that works for now until as long as you want to be using it. And now that brings in what's happening to our systems, to the rainfall, to sea level rise, to groundwater. All of these elements are changing with climate change. And so that's another piece of that. So that brings some complexity into what we're doing from the standpoint of making sure that we understand the flows today. We understand the flows that we should be thinking about in terms of population change or land use change. But then overarching all of that, we really need to make sure for each community that we understand how climate change could impact them.
So you said adding some complexity. I think you were being understated a touch. If I gather things correctly, that the 100, 100 year and the 500 year floods are happening a little bit more often than that. So how do you begin to, it feels like the models aren't quite caught up with how quickly things are changing. How are you helping people plan for that?
Well, I'm going to push back a little bit on it. I think the models are very much keeping up with that. In our water resources team, I'm the conveyance and storage team, and our water resources team, they are awesome at that part of it, about running the models that give us the information on the changes to rainfall and the changes to sea level rise. And so you mentioned a flood. That's a piece of that, and certainly a flood, 100-year flood changing would impact a city that is on a waterway. But it's also about sea level rise and storm surge and the changes in rainfall. And that's what's driving.
So it's all of that.
It is all of that.
Oh, yeah.
All of that is going to have to. And so the models are very sophisticated, mm-hmm. and we have the ability to model this and look into the future and be ready for this.
That's great to know.
It is.
Yeah. Especially since you're working on that. Yeah. I think most of us never actually think about our sewer system. Mm-hmm. Most of us have never heard of, a combined sewer overflow or any of this stuff. And we always just expect it to work. Like you turn on the lights, it's supposed to come on. You flush the toilet, it's supposed to go down, everything. But what you're sharing now is this super sophisticated approach to how we're dealing with sewage systems and storm sewers and how the combined sewers. I mean, it's really sophisticated, isn't it?
It is very sophisticated. I'm going to add another level of sophistication to this. I talked about storm flow. I talked about storm sewers and combined sewers. We have sanitary sewers. So that's another element of this. But all of this then ends up at a treatment works. And so when we're looking at a system and we're trying to understand how they run today, we have to, in the past, maybe let me kind of look backwards a little bit. In the past, we've looked at our collection systems as standalone systems. And we looked at it from the standpoint of here's what's happening in my combined sewer system or my sanitary sewer system from a collection system standpoint. But all of these are conveying flow to a treatment works. And we really have to start thinking about this as a complete system. And so when we look forward, we're looking at it as one water. We're looking at it as what is the rainfall, what is coming into our conveyance and storage systems, but what's happening at our treatment works. And when we look at that, then we start to understand a complete water cycle. And that's really from where we need to be as an industry. We really need to think of this complete water cycle.
So that's a shift from when you started.
It's very much a shift from when I've been doing this for 32 years. And when I started, we were more focused on the collection system. And quite frankly, there were a lot of problems with the with the collection systems.
Well, it sounds like because if we only had to start treating sewage in the 50s,
yeah.
right, then this is all relative. I mean, it's been since the 50s, but there was a lot of figuring out to do in the first probably couple decades.
There was a lot of figuring out, and many utilities were consolidating. And I'm going to use Cincinnati as an example. The combined sewer system is the city of Cincinnati, but the sewer district takes care of all of Hamilton County. So all of those individual smaller sewer systems came together to a district. So now you have not only the complexity of combined sewers and sanitary sewers, but you have systems that have been built over time and with different regulations and to different standards.
Okay. So for those of people that might not be in the United States, Cincinnati is in Ohio.
It's in Ohio. It's on the Ohio River.
Okay. Yeah. How many people in the metropolitan area would you guess? Venture a guess is fine.
I'm going to venture a guess. I think like 850,000 people.
Okay. So it's just a significant size.
Yes.
We don't normally think of what you're sharing, and it's been really educational about how complicated and sophisticated this is. And we don't normally think of technology in sewers. We just think of a pipe that goes to a plant. And most of us don't know what happens to a plant, but something happens there, right? But are there any advancements in technology that help us monitor or manage sewer systems or combined sewer systems? And how does that help mitigate what you shared with us about not only extreme weather events, but climate change in general?
Okay. Well, I'm going to look back, and I mentioned that I've been doing this for 32 years. When I first started, we were measuring flow with chart recorders.
And a chart recorder?
A chart recorder is the data was coming to you on a round chart, and it was not electronic. And so as a young engineer, one of my first jobs was to take the chart recordings and then to decide what the flow was over time. Okay, so you can think about it. I would get a stack of these round paper charts, and my job was to post-process this information and come back with the data. Okay, now we can pull that information from the cloud. And so in terms of advances, just in flow monitoring, the advances are amazing.
How does flow monitoring help you or a municipality or somebody that's in charge of this, how does that work? Why is that important? I mean, I can guess, but I don't want to guess.
So it's important to understand the flow and think about 3,000 miles of sewer. And so 3,000 miles of sewer, half of which of that is combined. And the flows in the combined sewer system change depending upon the season, and they change depending upon the rainfall.
So 3,000 miles would be about London to Rome, maybe a little less or something like that, or Los Angeles to New York is somewhere in that ballpark. That's
gotcha.
A lot of sewage. That's
that
a lot of line, I mean.
That's
yeah.
a lot of sewer, yeah. and it ranges from 8-inch pipe to 20 feet. In diameter.
Wow.
So very complex from the standpoint of the differences in size and the differences in material, but more important, it is spatially spread out over a large area. And from the standpoint of understanding the flows that are coming to the treatment works, that's what the flow monitoring does for you. So if you want to understand what you have today, you need to monitor the flows. If you want to understand projecting into the future, how you can change those flows, you have to know what you have so you can project into the future. So, and we build hydraulic models, mathematical models of these sewer systems. And that is that was my last project when I was at Cincinnati at EMSD. I was the project manager for the development of the hydraulic model. And we...
Sorry, Cincinnati Metropolitan Sewage District?
Yes.
MSD? Okay,
MSD.
Great.
So we put monitors in, over 300 monitors throughout the system, and then we developed a mathematical model of the sewer system. So we are able to use that model to understand how the flows in the piping network, how those flows change over time. We can use it for what's happening today, and then we can look into the future and say, okay, what would change in the future? What if we did get a different rainfall? What if we got the rainfall that we today, what if that rainfall was a 10-year storm? What if it was a typical year storm? What if it changed over time? Then how does that flow change? And so once you have that information, then you have the ability to make changes in the system that could control that flow.
Why is getting this right important for a community? It could be obvious, but I'm curious. I'm sure I'm missing something just from thinking it through. Like, having this level of sophistication, is it important for businesses to operate and families to live comfortably and all that stuff?
It is, but that's the piece of it in the system. The other piece is what we talked about earlier, is what's happening in the river. So from a regulatory standpoint, a community needs to have a plan to reduce those flows. And typically, in America, typically you're trying to capture 85% of the overflow in a typical year. And so you need to understand what that flow is. You need to understand what your system can do. And you need to understand then, where can I change the system? And so the opportunities that we have to change the system in the past there have been three opportunities. One, you can store some flow, and you might store it with storage tanks, or you might put in a tunnel. And an example of kind of an iconic project that I get to work on is in London, is the Thames Tideway tunnel system. It's 26 kilometers of tunnel from the western part of London all the way to the eastern part, all under the Thames River. And when they're done, they will capture 94% of the overflow in a typical year.
That's a massive project.
That's a massive project. Yeah. So that's one element. The second piece
when it goes into that tunnel, does it stay there until it's ready to be treated, or what happens to it?
Ready to be treated is, yes.
Okay.
Simply put, it is, but that's not a very long time. That's usually like 2 days. You don't want to store sewage for a long time because it will go septic. So you only have about 2 to 3 days to be able to pump out the tunnel. So it's a very sophisticated operation to understand what the treatment works can take, what goes into the tunnel, what comes out of the tunnel, and making sure that you don't overfill a tunnel. So that all of that goes into, that's the storage element. The second piece of this is you could upsize the plant and convey more flow to the plant. But then, you know, this comes in at a cost. It's not cheap to do that. So option number three would be source control. And so source control could be you could separate the system. So you could install a new storm sewer and then separate into a sanitary sewer and a storm sewer. You could also do source control like green infrastructure. And some examples of green infrastructure would be a rain garden or rain barrels. Something of that sort. The idea with green infrastructure is that you're keeping the stormwater from getting into the combined sewer system. And then that stormwater is handled then, it's infiltrated into the ground, or it is after you've retained a certain amount of it, it would overflow then, but it's handled as stormwater, not as combined flow. So those are the pieces of it. So that's what we've had in the past. In the past, we've had those three options. You can store it, you can convey it, or you can reduce it. But kind of building on your question about why is it important to monitor the flow, now looking into the future where we're going is understanding how the system works as a whole. And so if we think about it as we have a treatment plant, we have a collection system, we have the flows that are coming into the collection system, and if you've got the ability to pull some flow off in real time, and you know what's coming to you, so this is the other piece of that, so looking at your system, looking at the rainfall that is coming, because this is rainfall driven, and understanding how that rainfall is impacting a portion of the system, then you have the ability in real time to change what's coming to the treatment works.
Wow, that sounds really high-tech and amazing.
It is high-tech. It's amazing, it's cool, yeah. And it's fun to work on.
And that's coming down the pike, no pun intended, around water, right? Yeah.
That's what's being done today.
Yeah, okay.
We're going further. Where we're going in the future is to develop a digital twin of these systems.
What's a digital twin?
So a digital twin would be a representation of how the system is set up today. So it's a twin digitally. It's more than, or maybe it's different than a hydraulic model, because it's a digital twin could be more about how you control the system. And so Jacobs has a process called Replica. It's a software that we've developed that that allows us to build these digital twins of very complex treatment works, pump stations, real-time control facilities, interceptors, and it gives us the ability to understand how the system is operating today. And then we can understand what options are available for controlling that system. But where we're heading is to automate that so that the system is receiving predictive rainfall and then making those decisions on its own and using artificial intelligence and then controlling.
Wow.
So that's where we're heading.
That's really amazing. So this digital twin will begin to learn what happens and then make whatever the magic it makes, right? And makes decisions that
We call that engineering.
Great,
rather
thank
than
you.
Magic.
Well, thank you. That's really interesting. Now, you've talked about controlling these flows and what have you. What's the intersection between private property owners and the government or government sectors on sewage handling as well as storm water handling? And how do they have to work together to ensure that the whole system actually works properly? Because it seems like if a private property owner isn't playing well with the city, things your planning can get all messed up.
It can. So I think it helps to understand it in most cities what the utility is responsible for. So if you take a typical street, the utility is responsible. Let's assume that the sewer is in the street. And we'll talk about them outside the street later. So in the street, they're responsible for the mains, the manholes, and often the laterals. And the laterals are that part of the sewer that goes from your house to the main. So they're responsible for that portion of it. So what happens on private property is often not the responsibility of the utility, but that impacts the flows that go into the sewer system, and whether it's a combined sewer system or a sanitary sewer system. And we see this more having an impact on sanitary sewers. Mm-hmm. We've not talked that much about them, but our sanitary sewers are impacted by inflow and infiltration. So a little bit about sanitary sewers. They're designed to take sanitary flow. They're designed to take the flow from inside your house
Okay.
or your business.
All right.
They're not designed to take stormwater. And so as our systems are aging in America, we have a huge problem with aging infrastructure. And that as they age, they are they're breaking down and they're accepting more of this INI, more of this stormwater. And a lot of that INI is coming in on private property. And over half of that is coming in, depending on where you are and depending on what's happening. So that is the intersection of having, you need to understand where the problems are. You need to understand what is the public responsibility and what's the private citizen's responsibility. And then develop a game plan for what are you going to do about that. So that's how I see the intersection.
Okay. Now, if there's a big development in a city especially, and they put a lot more pavement in, I assume there's regulations on how to deal with the water that comes off like a major parking lot or something like that in order to not completely disrupt the...
There is. Yeah. In every city that I've worked in, when you change, and let's do it from a, if you were in a combined sewer system, there are regulations that say if you change the characteristics of the catchment, then you have to retain that flow. So that you, because as we look at what we're trying to solve a problem with runoff. And runoff is exacerbated by the land use. And so kind of an example of that is if you look at a parking lot and it rains, then that parking lot, the runoff is very quick and it's almost 100%. I happen to live on a small farm in Indiana, and I will say that the rainfall characteristics and the runoff characteristics of my hayfield are very different than what you see in a parking lot in an urban environment. And so that's a very simplistic view of that. But in terms of land use and how the system is operating, and so that's the opportunity. The opportunity is to look at our catchments and look at our what's impacting our combined sewers, and can we effectively change that? And so you look at all of these pieces. You look at it from the standpoint of, can I change that? Can I control that? Can I store that? Should I convey it? And what does all of this do to the receiving stream?
Now, you've mentioned you have quite a bit of experience in this, and Jacobs, combined with all the talent you have here, has like hundreds and hundreds of years of combined experience, if not thousands. What are some lessons that Jacobs has learned over the years in working on planning, design, and construction of these types of projects? I'm sure there's tons of lessons.
There are tons of lessons, but I'm going to give you the one that I think is the most important.
Great.
And the one that I think is most important is that we have to look at this as one water. We have to look at it as water is a resource. It is precious. And so often as engineers, we have looked at water as a problem. And as long as we keep looking at it as a problem, we won't truly recognize how important it is. Cities are now starting to understand that, and they're starting to understand that rather than it being like INI,
inflow
and infiltration.
Thank you.
Which goes into a sanitary sewer. Is that really a bad thing, or is that a resource? And so I think as from a lessons learned that I see in this industry in 32 years of doing this, it's a system, it's about one water, it's about water is precious, and we need to understand how can we handle this resource so that we value it.
Wow, this has been a very interesting and amazing conversation. I'm sure we could talk for hours, but we've got to wrap it up. But I'm always worried that I forgot to ask something really important. Is there anything that I didn't mention, ask that you want to mention?
There is not. Thank you. I've really enjoyed this.
Great. It's now, where can people get more information if they want to find out more?
Jacobs.com, and look for the water page.
Great. Well, thank you so much. This was terrific.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Inflection Points, a podcast series from Jacobs. To find out more, please visit Jacobs.com. Jacobs, challenging today, reinventing tomorrow.